Charity and compassion would not exist in the world were it not for the church. Byron Barlow tells you why, here on Probe.
Standing on the jetway high in the Andes, boarding a flight out of Cusco, Peru, I overheard an American college student say to his companion, "You see that older guy up there? He's a professor. Came here to give lectures on Christianity." In an apparent reference to abuses of local Indians by the conquistadors centuries earlier, he continued, "Haven't Christians done enough to these people?" Turning around, I said, "Excuse me, I couldn't help but overhear. I'm with the professor, and yes, we were giving guest lectures from a Christian worldview at the university. But did you know that all these people standing in between us and the professor were helping with humanitarian aid in the poorest villages around here?" Well, he sheepishly mumbled something about every story having two sides. But his meaning was clear. What good could possibly come from Christians somehow imposing their beliefs on these indigenous people? Their culture had been ruined by Christians, and they should be left alone. Popular sentiments, but are they fair and accurate? Well, unbiblical excesses during the Inquisitions, the Crusades, and other episodes are undeniable. Yet these deviations from the teachings of Christ and the Bible are overwhelmingly countered by the Church's good works and novel institutions of care, compassion, and justice. One historian wrote, "From the wellspring of Christian compassion, our Western civilization has drawn its inspiration and its sense of duty for feeding the hungry, giving drink to the thirsty, looking after the homeless, clothing the naked, tending the sick, and visiting the prisoner." As one writer put it, missionaries and other Christians lived as if people mattered. Christianity had exploded onto a brutal, heartless Greco-Roman culture. Followers of this radical new religion set a high standard for caring for the downtrodden, the abused, and the ill, even at the risk of their own death. They started the first orphanages and hospitals and gave enormous amounts to charity. The author of Church History in Plain Language wrote, "Pagan society, through its excesses, teetered on the brink of extinction. Christianity, however, represented a new way. Compassion and charity are Christian ideals. Early Christians set a model for the descendants to follow, a model that today's modern secular societies try to imitate, but without Christian motivation. The fellow boarding the plane with me was uninformed and, you know, probably biased. Today, most people take for granted the notion that it's good to help the needy and the oppressed. But wherever it's found, in religious or secular circles, it can usually be traced back to Jesus Christ and his followers."
You've been listening to Probe with your host, Byron Barlow. If you'd like a copy of Byron's script, Charity and Compassion, Another Reason Christianity is Good for the Church, visit us online at probe.org and join us next time here on Probe.
Militant atheist Christopher Hitchens carps that religion poisons everything. Fellow atheist Richard Dawkins claims, quote, "There's not the slightest evidence that religious people are any more moral than non-religious people." True? Well, not according to social scientists from Princeton and other top universities. As citizens, religious people generally shine. For every altruistic act, like giving blood, performed by non-religious people, the religious perform 1.5. Also, those active in religion in the U.S. volunteer in their communities more. In America, religious people are overwhelmingly Christian in affiliation. Surveys new and old show that religious people give much more generously to all kinds of charity than anyone else. Religious youth smoke less, including marijuana, drink less, and commit fewer violent crimes and a host of other negative behaviors. But haven't the centuries witnessed a parade of continual religious wars, persecutions, and mayhem? Among Christianity's sins, you'll surely hear the litany of forced conversions, expansion by so-called Christian states mingled with genocide, execution of accused heretics and witches, and the ever-infamous Inquisition. Regrettable, mostly inexcusable, but totally overstated. Dinesh D'Souza writes that this popular refrain also greatly exaggerates crimes of religious fanatics while neglecting or rationalizing the vastly greater crimes committed by secular and atheist fanatics. Some historians dispute the claim that the Crusaders were rapists and murderers. It can be documented that they were actually pilgrims using their own funds to liberate long-held Christian lands and defend Europe against Muslim invaders. What about heretics who were burned at the stake? It turns out that much of the modern stereotype of the Inquisition is essentially made up. Inquisition trials were fairer and more lenient than their secular counterparts. Atheism is associated with far more death and destruction than religion is, particularly Christianity. Atheistic mega-murderers like Stalin, Hitler, and Mao were responsible for killing tens and tens of millions. Consider this. Over 500 years, the Crusades, Inquisition, and witch trials killed fewer than 1% of those killed by atheist regimes over only a few decades. That's 99 to 1. History shows that it's atheism, not Christianity, that's bad, even murderous, for society. Atheist Dawkins hopes religion can be wiped out like smallpox. The world had better hope not. Christianity is unique. No other religion or philosophy so highly values taking care of the young, sick, orphaned, depressed, and widowed, hands-on and sacrificially. In contrast, to ancient Greeks and Romans, life was cheap. Infanticide, that is, baby killing, was practiced like it was no big deal. It was even celebrated by their mythology. This ungodly practice was opposed by Christians, whose influence eventually caused Roman emperors to outlaw it. First-century believers rescued unwanted Roman babies from being tossed into the Tiber River. They raised them as their own. Pagan emperors pronounced death sentences on a whim. A father had the right to kill his own child if she displeased him. Life was expendable, even among families. Abortion, human sacrifice, and suicide were all normal parts of societies everywhere before Christianity gained a foothold. One exhaustive survey of historical documents found that antiquity has left no trace of organized charitable effort. Japanese holy men kept the wealthy from relieving the poor because they believed them to be odious to the gods. Jesus turned all of this on its head. The parable of the Good Samaritan was a bombshell, even among the religious Jews. Scripture says that Jesus had compassion on them and healed their sick. Christ's disciples went around healing and teaching as their master had. Believers were instructed to care for widows, the sick, disabled, the poor, and orphans. By the time of Justinian, churches were operating the only old folks' homes. Now we just take them for granted. Greeks had diagnostic centers but no nursing care. Roman hospitals were only for slaves, gladiators, and the occasional soldier. So Christian hospitals were the first voluntary charitable institutions. The ancient code was leave the ill to die. Roman colonists in Alexandria even left their own friends and next of kin behind during a plague. Christ followers stepped up to fill the compassion void, especially during such plagues, which shocked unbelievers. One Roman soldier in Constantine's army was intrigued by Christians who brought food to his fellow soldiers who were afflicted with famine and disease. He studied this inspiring group who displayed such humanity and was converted to the faith. He represents part of why the early church grew despite bouts of severe persecution. Christians believed that people matter to God because Jesus showed us that people matter to God. The Christian response to suffering changed the world for good and set the standard for compassion for everybody else. In ancient Greece and Rome, charitable giving was unknown except for gaining favors and fame. This stood in stark contrast to Jesus' ways. He rebuked the Pharisees whose good deeds were done for public acclaim. Christ's ethic of sharing with any and all and helping the underprivileged brought a revolution that eventually converted the entire Roman Empire, and it continues today. The ancient world knew two types of giving, charity and liberality. The root word of charity is caritas, which meant giving to relieve economic or physical distress without expecting anything in return. Kind of sounds like grace, doesn't it? The root word of liberality meant giving to please the recipient. It was a tit-for-tat kind of arrangement. The well-off pagans gave not out of any sense of caring, but out of what Aristotle termed liberality in order to demonstrate their magnanimity and even superiority. They funded parks, statues, and public baths with their names emblazoned on them. Even the little philanthropy the ancients did was seldom received by the needy. Those who received it were ones who could pay back in some way. Well, believers were different. Cyril, Bishop of Jerusalem in the 5th century, sold church ornaments to feed the poor. Congregations kept lists of the needy and supported them generously. Early Christians innovated 5 ways to use their own funds for the general welfare. First, those who joined were expected to give, whether rich or poor. Christ even called some to give all they had to the poor. Second, they had a new motivation, the love for an example of Christ, who being rich became poor for others' sakes. Third, Christianity, like Judaism, created new objects of giving. Widows, orphans, slaves, and the persecuted received it. The fourth Christian innovation was personalized giving. For the most part, the few Roman acts of relief were just politics as usual. Last, Christian generosity was not solely for insiders. This was truly radical. The emperor, known as Julian the Apostate, complained enviously that since Christians support both their own poor and ours as well, all men will see that our people lack aid from us. One secular critic of Christianity wrote, "The active, habitual charity of private persons, which is such a conspicuous feature in all Christian societies, was scarcely known in antiquity. That is, until Christ followers showed up." 3rd century deacon St. Lawrence was ordered by a Roman official to bring him some of the treasures of the church. He showed up with poor and lame church members. For this affront, he was roasted to death on a gridiron. Today, a Florida homeless shelter named after St. Lawrence provides job help and basic assistance to the poor of our time, who are still seen as treasures. Christians in the Middle Ages furthered the pattern of compassion set by ancient believers like St. Lawrence. The Bishop of Winchester in the 10th century sold all the gold and silver vessels of his cathedral to relieve the poor who were starving during a famine. Church people gave alms as a way of life. Food was distributed 3 times a week to anybody who asked. One historian says the church was a continent-wide organization for charitable aid. Christian hospitals spread to Europe by the 8th century. Even Arab Muslims followed suit. Christianity was already changing the world, even beyond the West. The much-maligned Crusaders founded healthcare orders, helping Muslims as well as Christians. Medical nursing, a Christian innovation in ancient times, took leaps forward through the influence of Christ follower Florence Nightingale. During the Crimean War, she exposed herself to deadly disease. Often working 24-hour days, she bandaged and comforted injured and dying soldiers. Back home, she dedicated the remaining 50 years of her life to hospital reform. Then, the Industrial Revolution in England ushered in a shameful exploitation of children. Kids as young as 7 worked in horrible conditions in coal mines and chimneys. Compassionate believers like William Wilberforce rallied their callous countrymen to pass laws against the worst child labor. Lord Shaftesbury was the real Superman of this cause. His years of countless speeches, personal sacrifices, and dogged persistence paid off with vastly improved child labor conditions. Child labor has since been outlawed in Western nations, but it continues strongly in nations less affected by Christian culture. We could go on, the Salvation Army, countless Christian charities, and all those who aided victims of Hurricane Katrina. Like someone said, Christian ideals have permeated society until non-Christians, who claim to live a decent life without religion, have forgotten the very origin of their decency. The founder of the Red Cross never forgot. He confessed on his deathbed, "I am a disciple of Christ, as in the first century, and nothing more."